Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and The Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, The Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, The Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business.
Welcome to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. We have a special episode today, returning for, I believe, your third engagement, Renee.
I figured out the other day. I don't know if it's number three or number four, but okay. I've been here at least a couple of times.
Three or four. Well, Renee Rauhauser from Allentown, Pennsylvania is joining us. Renee is a very serious and accomplished home gardener and happens to be the father of my daughter-in-law. So Renee, you and I have had many fun conversations standing in your garden and standing here in my greenhouse. Michelle, we've brought you in on some seed sowing this year. So it's pretty exciting here in my greenhouse in the propagation tent that I now have a bunch of tomatoes and peppers and eggplant for you, Renee, as usual. And Michelle, I was thrilled that you took us up on the offer. And I've got cultivars that Michelle grows in her garden. One of the things I think we can touch on today is some of the cultivars that each of you choose or have chosen and why you've chosen them. And I think I emailed both of you and said I oversowed everything so that if anybody wants something that the other is trying, there'll be enough. We won't have to fight over plants. So anyway, Renee, welcome. Thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on again, and I appreciate being here. And like our conversations, we're standing in either my garden or your greenhouse, coming on the show, I always take away much more than I feel like I give. So I'm happy to be here. Okay, so like again, like so many things, I'll say blame Peter for me getting in the seed starting business. Right now, I'm pretty well into it, and really thanks to Peter. So right now in my basement, I've made two plantings so far. I made the first one February 15th and the second one March 1st. I have broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, lettuce, and a variety of flowers that I've sort of branched out into. My getting involved in the seed starting is at the urging of Peter, and I have to give him credit for really steepening my learning curve, not only with the expertise that he shares with me, but also with the supplies that he shared with me to get started. Let me describe a little bit. I'm a home grower. I have about 1,400 square feet under cultivation, and when I say 1,400 square feet, that's the area inside of my raised beds. I have all raised beds that I grow in. And that's about 47 and a half 4x8 raised beds, or I should say the equivalent to, because my raised beds are, some of them are, I have number 4x4s that I use for cold frames. And I also have some in a larger garden that are 4x24s. So that's a little background for what I try to accomplish here as a home grower. In my basement, I started off with the broccoli, the cabbage, and the lettuce first. That was February 15th. When I first started, you know, there's just like growing things out in the garden, there's a lot to learn, and you have to be patient with yourself. In fact, Peter, I just told our granddaughter Margot when we were talking about her cello and her practicing, I said, you have to be patient with yourself, Margot. You're not gonna practice one time and go, oh yeah, I get it, you know. So you have to be, I've had to learn to be patient with myself in the growing realm. And what the seed starting has allowed me to do is be a little more precise with my planning and be a little more precise with exactly what I want to grow. I have access to some very good retail garden centers that have plants, But oftentimes when I go there, the broccoli packets are marked broccoli, you know, and with my own seed starting, I can choose what variety of broccoli do I want. What do I want for spring planting? What do I want for later in the summer planting? So that's been one of the advantages. And the timing part of it too is with broccoli, I'll probably make three plantings in the spring. My first planting will be early in April. That's a little early, even with the climate changes that we're going through, and even with the warm weather we're having out there. And I think we'll get to this later, but the first plantings I keep well protected from the weather and try to warm them, keep them a little bit warmer, especially the ground. I try to warm up the ground first, which is something to learn. So I have the broccoli and the lettuce and the cauliflower and the cabbage going. The place where I really learned the advantages of starting my own seeds, starting my own plants, was with Brussels sprouts. Most of the garden shops have the Brussels sprouts available first thing in the spring. I've had a couple of retailers told me when I like to plant them in June, and so that I have the Brussels sprouts in the fall. And I've had retailers told me, oh no, that's a spring crop. You need to put that in right away. So I've soon learned that if I wanted to plant Brussels sprouts in June, it was going to be something that I did on my own. And that's one of the things I got started on. And now I'll start the seeds for the Brussels sprouts, maybe the beginning of May, end of April. And I like to put those in between June 15th and July 1st.
Renee, let me jump in for a minute here, just to catch everybody up. And several of your practices translate very well to commercial growing. So I just want to touch on those for our listeners. And let me back up to your seed germination, seed starting in the basement. We set you up with some LED lighting and a very small flood and drain system with, what do you have, two by two trays?
Two by two trays, yeah.
Okay, so essentially, everything's smaller than in a commercial greenhouse, Renee, but you're doing exactly what many of us do in a greenhouse, although in the greenhouse we're using sunlight. But let me just put a stamp on that and say, even in my propagation tent in the greenhouse during winter months or during last month of February into March, I'm still using some supplemental LED lighting on the seedlings that I'm growing for you and Michelle and myself, just to beef them up a little bit. So when you mentioned the patience part of it, Renee, of a few minutes ago, that is so true, even for our commercial growers. And let me describe how your patience. I was concerned at a couple of points over these first few years of you germinating in the greenhouse, I mean, in the basement. I was concerned that frustration might lead you to throw your hands up and say, no, I'm just not interested in doing this. We went through a learning curve together in terms of the cell size of the unit that you're sowing a seed into. And we also went through a learning curve with the substrate, the growing mix that you were germinating in and then growing the seedlings in. And all the normal hurdles that a commercial grower has to clear in terms of water holding capacity for a mix, germinating mix versus a growing on mix. So I want to credit you. You do practice what you preach, and it's been that patience that got you to this point where you're producing seedlings in the basement that are about as high a quality as what you'd buy in the greenhouse, or if they're a little bit lower, it's the growing on stage that I want to focus on with you in the upcoming years. And you know, you show me the door whenever I'm at your house and say, when are we putting a greenhouse up in the backyard?
Yeah. Yeah, we're still fighting a greenhouse battle, but you didn't win that one yet. So, and again, part of the patience and part of my good fortune is having access to your expertise and saying, hey, this didn't go right, this didn't go right. But with a little additional patience and a little extra effort in digging, there's a lot of that information that's available in other sources. I'm just fortunate I have that information available an email away. So that's all happened. And as I got started, if we want to talk a little bit about maybe someone considering getting started in this, as I got started, I realized the things that are obvious to so many experienced growers, what you referred to as a substrate, the importance of that, the moisture content of that when I sow the seeds, the temperature of that, hence the heating pads that often come with the little growing kits, and the importance of the lighting, how that's going to impact what the plant looks like as it grows, namely avoiding those long, stretched out, leggy plants that is a problem for, I think, a lot of home growers when they first start growing. And then after the plants germinate and the true leaves appear, the feeding program, you know, making sure you you keep them fed at the right level so that they have an opportunity to grow in the way that you want them to grow. So,
Renee, another point of growth or a topic of conversation that's ongoing for us is when I first met you and got to know your gardening activities, you are very much on the natural and organic side of your inputs. And Michelle, at one point, as we were germinating seeds in Renee's basement using an organic liquid concentrate, we either thought we were going to be harvesting fish out of the water and wondered where the fish came from. but Renee, I want to again credit you not only with patience, but some flexibility in that it's easiest, best, I think, in terms of producing the plant and the whole big picture of having it in your basement, that we've gone with a commercial inorganic fertilizer to get these plants going. We can always return to the organic side and the natural side. I wanted to clear these hurdles of the moisture management and the growing medium, get all those things secure so that we only have one variable to be playing around with. So now that you're producing seedlings of quality that satisfies you, we can return in the future to your source of fertilizer and work on it so that if it's a natural fertilizer, well, we've learned now that you're going to change that solution regularly, you know, before it takes on a foul smell. But Michelle, I think there have been lots of lessons here in what Renee and I have been doing together that scale up perfectly for commercial growers.
The way Renee talked about why he decided to start seeds, besides the unbearable peer pressure of it all, was that he wanted specific varieties and he wanted them available at certain times. And I think that if you're thinking about it from a business perspective, those are really important reasons to take a step further outside to learn this new skill and in a way to vertically integrate. You could purchase the seeds and the inputs. And I think a lot of people want to think about the cost of how much it costs to buy the plant versus how much it costs to grow it yourself, or the investment we've talked about in the past. Does it make sense to use those resources? What are the costs of starting earlier? Outside of all of those, it's also really important to make sure that you have the inputs you need. And we've talked about this more with supply chain disruptions, but knowing exactly what variety you want for yourself, for your family, or for your customer, you know they're looking for something, guaranteeing that you have access to those plants is really important. And then the timing, right? If by doing it himself, Renee's able to get that third planting, or he's able to do it much earlier than a garden center would. And so the reasons might not be always economical, or it might not fit into that return on investment, but those are two really important reasons to do it yourself.
You know, that's an excellent point, Michelle. And Renee, what I'm going to describe you as a large or a complex home gardener. Okay, so you're on the large side of home gardening. We focus on the small side of commercial. And that dynamic allows you to contribute to our conversations. So as small growers, and I was one for most of my career, I wanted exactly the cultivar that it happened to be my mother. You know, she needed a particular shade of a particular color of impatience. I needed that specific cultivar, and I needed it on this specific date. And this is most challenging for a small grower in this relatively small quantity. So I propagated as much as I could on my own, on site, so that I could satisfy those three requirements. Renee, you're kind of living and walking that same path. And to both of you, I had so much fun working with sowing the three of our seeds last month, because, you know, at one point I leaned back in the greenhouse and scratched my head with a grin. And I said, wow, this is amazing. Michelle, Renee, and I were looking at the same seed catalogs, mostly Harris seeds and Johnny's. We're ordering our seeds. They're arriving here. And each of us has different favorites. But what I found really interesting, guys, was that in each category, pepper, tomato, and eggplant, there was some crossover. There were some a common cultivar or two. And I found that some things the same, some things different. It's just fascinating. And it just brings in that whole seed catalog thing and how much fun we all have looking at cultivars.
One of the places where I try to make the connection to commercial growers, small commercial growers, farm market type growers is by going to farm markets and talking directly to the growers. And one of my favorite stories of that sort of thing is I remember being in a farm market, and I think it was very late in the season, and the one grower was still offering broccoli. And I didn't, and by late in the season, I mean probably early summer, maybe getting toward midsummer. And my broccoli was finished. It was done. The side shoots were done, and everything was done. And I asked the grower about it, and it just so happened that the lady manning the stand said, oh, it was her husband that grew the broccoli. Let me call him and ask him what variety it is. And she called him on the phone and handed me the phone. And I talked to him right there about when he started his broccoli, what variety it was. So yeah, there's a big crossover. But, you know, for me, it's more of a trickle down than a trickle up, you know, that helped me understand what my own seed starting could do.
And so, Renee, let me jump in again. We've touched on this. You are starting the more of the early season cold crop in your basement. The reason that I'm doing your warmer crops, your tomato, pepper, eggplant, is because you don't yet have that greenhouse environment. You don't have a way to grow them between young plant to transplant. So that's what I'm doing up here in my greenhouse. And that's where, with tongue in cheek, I keep saying to you, as soon as we get a little greenhouse up in your yard, you're going to have fun growing some of these warmer crops. So you do have a screened in porch, and it is perfect for hardening things off, but it's not a greenhouse, so that if you try growing your tomato transplants in there or peppers, they're going to be leggy. And we can't grow them in the basement because you'd need to cover from floor to ceiling with LED lights to have enough space to do that. So that's where we've been working well together. And I'm so proud of the job you're doing producing a quality broccoli transplant or a Brussels sprout when you want it.
Well, yeah, working well together. You grow all these high-quality peppers and tomatoes for me that I wouldn't have a chance of replicating. So that's what working well together means, here, Michelle. But you're right. It's for me, it is partially space, and I can use that as my excuse. But also, I have a sense that getting tomatoes and peppers to quality transplant size is a little more complicated than maybe certainly than lettuce and even broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage. So Roy, it would take me a long time and a lot of adjustments to try to approach the quality of plant, and not to mention the quantity of plants that you share with me, that you start for me and give to me.
Well, let me remind our listeners and you, Renee, that anyone who travels 5 hours to help me on a weekend when I was building my greenhouse, that's a customer for life for me. I'll grow tomato transplants until I'm not breathing for you.
Yeah, it's a small price to pay. So let's get back to that variety thing again that you just touched on. My seed starting a little bit and your greenhouse capacity a whole lot allows me to look at a lot of different varieties and try a lot of different varieties. And not to mention your knowledge of all the varieties that are available. And an easy one might be, and this I think more came from me, we do a lot of spaghetti sauce and pizza sauce processing during the season, and by a lot, I mean, we probably do about 4 dozen quarts, maybe between 4 and 5 dozen. I don't think we might be a little bit more of that, but that's for 3 families for us to get us through the winter. So we do a lot of tomato sauce, spaghetti sauce, and at first, when we started, I was just whatever I had, new girls. Big beefs, whatever happened to be out there, I just cooked them and threw them in the sauce. Then as we got a little more sophisticated, we started trying Amish paste. And we like that. There's a reason why it's a paste tomato, because it makes good paste. So we switched to that. Then we thought, everything you buy in the stores, like San Marzano, and that's supposed to be the Cadillac of paste tomatoes. So we tried that for a couple of years. And there's a lot of appeal about San Marzano, but if we're doing 2 pots of tomato sauce on a Saturday, the Amish paste tomatoes are by far way more convenient. So your work has allowed me to easily switch back and forth trying those.
Renee, what you just said is exactly, what I talked about, my mother being very specific, cultivar specific in impatience. Mm-hmm. And you're now able to capitalize on your specificity in terms of the quality of the tomato. I think that, Michelle, that to me, toggling back and forth, commercial, home grow, the principle is the principle. And it just pleases me to be able to connect dots the way we're doing.
There's something to be said when you're a commercial grower of understanding what your customers want and what they're using. And so that experience of actually boiling the tomato or cooking the tomatoes and turning it into sauce and understanding the difference between the Amish paste and the San Marzano is valuable information. And so for you, it's what works in your kitchen and or what your family enjoys. But taking it a step back and understanding what your customers are going to do with this, I feel like, Peter, this was probably back to our first conversation when I was talking to Indoor Vertical Farms. And they're like, but I grow lettuce. And I'm like, but there's lettuce for soups and there's lettuce for sandwiches and mixed greens and farmers markets, and it's each a different product, and understanding those differences is important in turning the highest value.
Bingo. Michelle, I've forgotten the young man's name. In the last year we had him on as a guest right here in Lowell next to us, that started the hot sauce
Brian.
Brian, yes. And Renee's description of the tomato sauce and how he's putting the ingredients and choosing it, it made me, took me back to that conversation with Brian in terms of starting from scratch, building a business. And then the challenge as his business grew became, where do I find the specific peppers that I want to include in the different sauces?
Yeah.
We touched on before how difficult it must be for growers to anticipate the market, what their buyers are going to want in any particular year. And I know when we talked about it before, I touched on, it's hard for me to anticipate that with my own family. You know, we go from everybody wanted lunchbox peppers 1 year, so I came up a little short, so I increased the amount by 50%, and they called off on lunchbox peppers. You know, so the local food bank got more lunchbox peppers that year. Yeah. And in terms of variety, that, you know, there's that same story there with lunchbox peppers. There was with tomatoes. For me, it started out with I just want lunchbox peppers, and then Peter, you grew a couple for me that were called Sweeties, and they turned out to be have much more appeal than the red lunchbox pepper. So we switched to Sweeties. And then there were some of those mini bells. They have different names. I think one's called Cupid, and I forget what the other one's called. And you just sort of threw a couple of those into the shipment for me 1 year. And I sort of begrudgingly put them in there because I don't have a lot of experimental space. You know, they turned out to be a pretty popular item too, you know, so, you know, there's a lot we could do with that. So I've learned, because of having access to different varieties, be able to try different varieties, I've learned what works and what has appeal for us down here.
Hey, Michelle, with Renee and I sharing grandchildren, when I hear from Renee that they're not eating the lunchbox peppers, when they come and visit, I'll stand there and take them to task and say, how come you're not eating any of those peppers? And they look at me like, how do you know?
I'm sure they don't quite understand our cross-referencing that we have access to. You know, so.
But Renee,
question is, which is better, having the cabbage that you wanted to grow twice in a row and nobody wanted, or the grandchildren that wanted something twice in a row and then they didn't?
I put up with their finickiness. You know, that's
so okay. This is an economic principle, Michelle. You and I have talked about, and Renee. So to run a garden center and deal with what you very eloquently put into words, you know, how do you predict what the demand is going to be? I have a rule or a question that I've posed to growers forever, and that is, would you rather sell out or grow extra? And in all of my work focusing on profitability and shrinkage and dumping things and whatnot, everything that I've done, Michelle, points to selling out and keeping the customer wanting a little bit rather than growing so many. Now, my dad and I had differing positions on this because he was the one at the cash register. And if we ran out of something, he had to hear it from the customer while I was out back just watering and stocking benches. Everything that I've seen, Michelle, in my work and my calculations have said, okay, If you're going to do one or the other, growing too many can get you into trouble. And Michelle, I've been waiting to ask you, in the news this past week, I've heard some news reports saying that some restaurants are considering pricing food differently during high and low demand periods. Have you heard that? So that on a busy weekend night, the pizza at, you know, Pizza Parlor X might cost more than it does on a Monday. Have you heard about that yet?
I I didn't see that article, but it already happens, right? You have early bird special, or you have lunchtime options. I was at Apple.
That's always on the discount side of things. I've never heard.
Well, people don't like surcharges. It always sounds better that you're discounting. So it makes people happier to say, hey, if you come for appetizers from 3 to 5, we'll give them to you half price, than to double the price the rest of the day.
Oh, so the half price is really the real price, and the real price is double?
Okay. In this case, it sounds like it.
So anyway, Renee, what are a couple of things that you're doing this year that you're looking forward to that's exciting you?
My focus for this year and the previous year is on extending the season, extending the growing season. And I should really say extending the harvesting season. And this is something that I sort of stumbled onto, got interested in, and realized that, you know, with just a little bit of effort and planning, I could continue to harvest a fair number of vegetables right through the first of the year and beyond that. So trying to increase my understanding of what I can have available for how long. And a good bit of that's obviously weather dependent, but the weather's been pretty friendly to us these past couple of years.
And so, Renee, in this sense, when you say extend the season, am I hearing accurately? You're talking more about the harvest, the end of the season, rather than jumping on the earlier part of spring. You're talking about going into New Year's, as you just said.
More extending the harvesting season, but this spring I'm trying to get the growing and the sowing season jump started too. But so let's come back to that. And go to the extending the harvesting season. And I've wondered, as I'm doing this, if the small commercial growers are already doing this sort of thing. And this is completely in my garden, not in a greenhouse, but I think this year it was the second week in January, sometime mid-January, I went out and cut some spinach that I planted in the fall. And I have spinach out there right now that whenever I'm ready for it, it's ready to be harvested. So that sort of thing. And how much I have available to me is contingent on the amount of space that I have as I'm making a transition. I keep my gardens pretty well planted through the year. I've figured out, but I try to make sure I have space to plant some things that I'll be able to harvest in November, December, even January. So spinach is one. I've had pretty fair success with lettuce. I either grow that in cold frames or under row cover. I've had very good success with carrots. I've picked those after the first of the year, and I suspect they would have them even longer if I have enough room to plant sufficient. The carrots is one of the favorites of the grandkids. They come over for Sunday dinner. They like to go out and pick three or four carrots per, and that's what they that counts as their vegetable for dinner. So I've been able to, this past year I was able to do that through December. I forget if when you were down for Christmas, I forget if we had had some of the carrots from the garden out then.
Yes, we did. The kids didn't get any that night. I had them all.
Oh, that's what all that whining was about. That's been a focus of mine. And again, I use cold frames and I use row cover.
When you grow longer, does that change then what you're doing in the warmer months? Like, because you can grow carrots longer, does that mean you're trying to put something else in later, or you just have extra carrots?
It doesn't usually supplant the summer crops. The relation it has with the summer crops is I have to think in terms of, for like, I plant beans three or four times a year. So the last planting of beans, I think I make August 1st. Well, I'm not going to be putting anything in after I harvest those beans. But the third planting, I can think in terms of when I take that third planting out sometime in September, I can get something else in there. So it doesn't replace, but I have to think in terms of, so what's following what there? Does that answer that?
And Michelle, what Renee's describing, let me fill in a couple of gaps. Renee, when you were describing size of some of the ground, raised beds, some of the 4x4s, I've seen where you have a panel of plastic that is a cover. It's a cold frame with a translucent cover over it, Michelle, which is the most basic description of a mini greenhouse. Or a little more, you've mentioned row covers, Renee. What comes to my mind on the commercial side is a high tunnel. And on a row cover, you might have a white mesh material just to keep heat in. And when I stand with you in the backyard and look at some of those winter or late seasons, I'm seeing instead of the white material for the row cover, I'm seeing something a little more clear, like a plastic that makes that little row cover a mini high tunnel. And not to have all of your square footage in the backyard like this, but I almost see Michelle, Renee making a row cover. Maybe it's a 6-foot section that he can pick up and this year put it over the late season spinach, or next year he might take that row cover or mini high tunnel and put it over a late crop of carrots. So Renee, when I stand there with you and come up, shoot out all these ideas and I get your eye roll and just both hands are saying, okay, wait, back off. But the vision is that I'm trying to listen to what I hear you say and watch what I see you doing and then just tweak it that little extra bit to get you continually moving forward, onward, upward. And I understand that at times it's a little too much because this isn't your career. Your career is daycare for not only the grandchildren we share, but your son. Both your sons have children. So it's just a fascinating, complex, gooey, messy, organized disorder. It's just a lot of fun to do all of this stuff together.
Well, when we stand there and you talk, you know, you see greenhouse and I try to scale that down to, so how can I make that work for me? And what you just described is pretty much one of the ways I'm trying to make it work. It's not a high tunnel. For me, it's a low tunnel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a tunnel that's about 1.5 to 2 feet high that I cover. And this is what I'm doing new this year to try and get started. And I can still remember one of your first trips into the backyard, and I had some floating row cover with the PVC over some plants. And you said, "Oh, you're trying to warm the soil." Well, no, I wasn't trying to warm the soil. I thought I was trying to warm the air. But just you making that comment, and then I started learning about germination temperatures for seeds. And said, "Well, I'm not trying to. I don't want to focus on warming the air. I want to focus on warming the soil." So now I'm doing things. One of the ways I try to warm the soil is I built these 4x4 boxes out of 1x5s, and they sit right on the raised bed frames. And then I make a 4x4 plastic cover, and I put that right over the box. So that's going to warm that section of the soil. And I've done that in the four places where I'm going to make my first planting of seeds for spinach, for lettuce, carrots, and red beets. And my thought is by getting that soil a little warmer, a little earlier, the seeds which are all early germinators, maybe will germinate a little sooner than they have been in the past. They germinate, the temperature outside continues to go up, I remove the covers, and eventually remove the whole frames. So I've if I stand here and listen to you and think about, well, how's this going to apply to me? Well, that helps guide a lot of what I'm trying to do.
And I think another thing that's important to highlight is the relationship of the gardener, small business, whomever, and the service provider or expertise or subject matter expert. And making that fit for you, because in a lot of places we look towards agronomists or garden centers or extension for advice, and we need to find a way to fit it in. And what I love, Renee, when you talk is that you're constantly figuring out how to make Peter's advice work for you, not adopting it wholesale and having him lead your operation, because he's not there. And it might not be what you're looking for. And so I think that that's a hard thing to do in general when you're talking to a service provider, let alone someone that you're related to and have a personal relationship. But the fact that you're constantly able to take a step back and figure out how to integrate it and not let it force you into a place that's uncomfortable is, I think, a really important lesson to share.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And but you know, first of all, like I recognize not everybody has access to the expertise that I have access to, with getting Peter to share his thoughts. And some of my fellow gardeners, they do exactly what you're saying, or maybe the opposite of what you're saying. They say, I just want to know. I want to know what I should do. They want to be told this is exactly what you should do. Do this, do this, do this. And it's more of a figuring out, well, how do I take that important idea, the soil temperature is closely related to when the seeds germinate, and make and impact that with what I can do here, as opposed to you need to do this kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that is an important relationship too.
Let me point out that every coin has a flip side. And Michelle, I'm currently writing an article on the Greenhouse Technology Project. And in that article, I'm talking about how growers can justify or measure what their technology bought them. And I went out of my way, I'm not done writing yet, but I'm taking a pause with a paragraph to say, hey, I've been so focused on teaching growers return on investment. And then my colleague, Michelle Klieger, an agricultural economist, has said to me, well, wait a minute, Peter, not everything has to be a clear cut ROI return. How about considering some of the less tangible benefits like opportunity costs and whatnot? So I want to make sure that this is a two-way conversation and a two-way experience, that I am learning as much from the two of you as you say you're learning from me. Renee, whenever I'm in your garden with you, with or without a beer, we are having such conversations that I'm coming home with ideas that are then spawning either a treatment in an experiment that I'm about to run, or I'm tweaking my outdoor home gardening practices. So yeah, this thing, as we wind down the conversation, is a two-way street. In this case today, it's a three-way street, if that is possible, between each of us. And I'm looking forward. Last year, Renee, you came up on Sow Day, and you and I sowed your things together. This year, you chose not to come on Sow Day, but you're coming up in a few weeks or a month or so on Transplant Day, so that we can enjoy each other's company and get all the tomato, peppers, eggplants transplanted into their containers. Michelle, depending on your availability, because I've got things for you this year, wouldn't it be fun for the three of us on that weekend to spend some time? But I understand, Renee, you might be bringing our youngest with you on board. And Michelle, you've got your two keeping you busy, so it might be like herding cats just to try to get all of that stuff up here to transplant.
That would certainly punch up transplant day.
Renee, thank you for joining us again. It's always a pleasure. And again, no one, has anyone been on more than once other than Renee, Michelle?
More than once, yes. Four times, no.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just keep that streak going.
Well, thanks for inviting me back. I enjoyed the conversation. And as you just mentioned, I learned plenty just sitting here chatting with you two.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate it wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us get discovered by new listeners. If you have questions, concerns, or would like to suggest a podcast topic, please email me at michelle@stratagerm.com. I love hearing from you. Until next time.